Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On Breakfast with Vossi and Brandy. Throwback Thursday.
Thank you all. Sitting ready. Racing. First away on the inside. Queen Esther, Avondale, Zena got out beautifully. Ritzer Ray to the inside. Moving up as Lacey Lowest on the outside as they go into the first turn. Further back was Zolar Icon. Take it all in a city. And the tail ender was Avondale Amore. Down the back, the leader, Queen Esther. Ritzer Ray to the inside, challenging. Two lengths away, Avondale, Zena. They will follow next as they come to the corner by Zolar Icon and Lacey Lowest around the turn. Queen Esther is the front runner. In second place, Ritzer Ray. It can't do any better. And the Reds going to win the last, the favourites home, and Queen Esther scores by four. Second is Ritzer Raider. Third in the event, Avondale Zena, followed by Lacey Lois. Next up on the run, Zolar Icon, Inner City, and Take It All was one of the tail enders with Avondale Amore. Queen Esther for Smiley Holloway gets the prize. Thank you, Nolan. Great stuff. It's been wonderful to know you, and it's a great win for Queen Esther in the last to pay $2.30.
What a poetry. What a voice. Poetry. Never missed a beat, never missed a day's work. Now, we're going to confirm or deny that. We've been talking about that since the start of the program today. The great, the legend, Paul Ambrosoli on Breakfast with Vossi and Brandy right now on Throwback Thursday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks, Vossi. Thank you very much indeed. You must have been talking about this all morning. How many days on this from work or whatever it might be?
Yeah. So how many did you, like, there were stories around at the time, never missed a day's work. You were doing, we didn't used to have the Sunday racing. So you would call dogs six nights of the week. And I guess you drive everywhere, you know, Wendy, Harold Park was there back in the day. Dapto, Bulleye, Gosford. Was it right? You never missed a work day.
Yes, I did that. I remember vividly. With my mechanic one day, he said, "You've been getting a new car next week or something like that." I said, "Why?" I said, "You know." He said, "Well, you've done 200,000. You've done, I think, 200,000 in this one." And I never had the faintest idea how many miles I did. And then at the end of the week, you know, this is when the companies start to take over buying the cars. And, so I suddenly worked out that I was doing a couple of thousand kilometres a week, which was a fair amount of miles to do. And I would imagine it even further than day in the traffic of today. That's what you used to do. As far as having days off sick and everything, well, yeah, I can remember having a blanket around my adapter one night. I was as sick as a dog. There's a few of them. But, you know, like, you go to work and you enjoy going to work, and sometimes you get a bit ill. And you don't want to be, landing somebody else into the work zone. So you just work your way through it. As simple as that. It never even sort of, until you've just mentioned it now, it never even dawned on me.
Bravo. Mm.
It does help if you like what you're doing, or if you love what you're doing. And obviously you did. You loved what you did. You could hear it in your voice. It didn't matter whether it was a maiden or whether it was, you know, the Easter egg final. You could hear it in your voice that you loved it.
Well, this is the whole point. I wanted to be a race broadcaster when I was 7 years of age. People say, how do you know when you were seven? Well, I can guarantee you, when I was 7 years of age, I wanted to be a race broadcaster. And when I was about 16, I walked, we moved to Wollstonecraft, and I walked into the lounge room, and My auntie Dot, was there, and she was a highfalutin journalist with a Sydney magazine. My uncle was an artist who'd won the Wynn Prize, and she was very well-spoken, extremely well-spoken. When I walked in, she said, "Paul, what are you going to do when you leave school?" or something like that. I said, "Oh, Auntie Dot, you know, I want to be a race broadcaster." "Oh," she said, "you can't be that." "Well, you could hit me in the face with a wet fish." I mean, I looked at her and said, "Why?" You know, I was stunned. I've never forgotten it. Absolutely stunned, because,
Auntie,
you know,
Dot,
she was such an eloquent... Yeah, she was Auntie, and she was just such an eloquent person. And she said, "Well, you don't speak correctly." Ooh. And she said, "You can't do that. You're going to be on radio at some stage, aren't you?" I said, "I'd love to be, but, you know," I said, that's not a given. Anyway, she said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do." She said, I'll try and do something for you. I'll send you down to a little old lady that I know. She might do it for me." So she sent me to a little old lady at Willoughby for voice lessons. And I've never forgotten it, because after the first day with her, the first hour with her, she changed my whole life. You hear people say these things, but you never, until you experience them, you really never know what you're talking about.
Incredible.
She changed my whole life in 1 hour. In 1 hour. I mean, I after that, for the next 6 months, I was walking around going, "Oh, now, Bronco," and all this, you know, to get my breathing correctly.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you don't realise how badly you breathe. People say to me now, "You know, you could walk in and talk all a race." I said, "Do you realise your elocution and your breathing is everything when you're calling races? You know, you can't... I mean, there's been a fair few occasions where you just run out of breath because you took the thing too far, and at the end of the race, you nearly die, you know, okay, because you just haven't kept the breath in you."
Yeah, so, Paul, there is famously, was there not, a race, it may have been Dapto again, where you got the hiccups as the dogs were being loaded into the boxes.
Oh,
is that correct?
Oh,
and you had to call the whole race with hiccups? So how did your breathing work there?
And it was a... to make matters worse, mate, it was a 700-yard race. It couldn't have a 300... They have 300-yard races today in the Greyhounds, and I hate them, but it couldn't be a 300-yard race. It was a 700-yard race. And I've never heard the replay, but Doug Melton was on with me that night, and Doug was the lovely, lovely gentleman, and he thought it was the greatest thing he ever heard. He replayed it half a dozen times as I was driving home. He said, "You'll hear some funny things, but a race caller with hiccups beats a lot of them." And I had the hiccups for a 700-yard race. Oh, mate, believe me, it was nightmarish, because you just didn't know when the hiccup was going to come in. So you're waiting for it, and as soon as you go, it goes...
Paul,
I remember it vividly.
Paul, do you start calling Penrith Panther games, their home games, on 2KA?
Well, what happened, I was working at Lithgow. Lithgow Greyhounds was the first place that I actually called a race. I went to Reg Cowden and said, "I can call a race." He said, "Yes, come up." And so I called the race, and that was at Lithgow Dogs. And I was working on occasions with bookmakers at that stage, and one of the bookmakers said, "Can you work the bag for me today?" I said, "Yeah, that's okay." So I was working on the bag from at Lithgow Dogs, and manager of the place went past, and I was talking to him because he was a punter, and that was it, you know. Anyway, he rang me. He rang me. He said, "Can you broadcast the rugby league?" I said, "Well, I haven't done a game, but I said, if you want me to, I'll do that." He said, "Well, the grand final of the second division's on," and he said, "We want to call it and record it." I said, "Okay." So to cut a long story short, I went to the Parramatta, Parramatta ground on the roof. And in amongst the TV blokes, I was sort of calling the second division grand final. And Penrith, who would have been about 100-1 to win the game, won by about 10 points to 4, 12 points to something. It was a small score.
Yeah.
And they won the grand final. And one of the bonuses of winning the grand final was you were elevated to first division, from second division to first division. So that's what happened. So anyway, I was at the Dogs again working, and the manager walked past. I said, "Mate," I said, "you're a little bit silly here." I said, "You should be covering the Penrith home game, the Penrith games, because Penrith is in your area." And he said, "Do you think so?" I said, "Well, you got no hope without me." I said, because they will not give you permission to do. I said, the Sydney stations will just outlaw you. But I said, I have a very heavy connection with one of the city clubs. I said, and I'll have the boss talk to him and say, you know, get Paul to do the calls.
Right.
So we were successful. And they gave us permission the first year round to do the home games. So we
this
did
is 57 years ago. This is 57
year.
Years ago, Paul. This is 1967, just so those tuned in understand. This is 57 years ago.
Yeah. God blimey, Charlie. Did you have to mention that?
Well, I was going to ask you the big question. How, look, can you honestly take a stab, a guesstimate, how many races do you reckon you called? How many dog races, given that most meetings had minimum 10, you're working 6 days a week? What's the number, Paul? It's a guessing game.
We can go lower. So it's only 60. It's 60 races a week, if you work it out that way. I've never, ever worried about it. It's 60 races a week, so multiply that by about... it's 50. That's right. It's 52 weeks in a year, isn't there? So you multiply it by 50. Let's say 50...
3,000, yes.
That's 3,000. Multiplied by 40, it's only 100. It's only 100 odd thousand, that's all.
100 odd thousand races. Wow. Mm. Wow. And just tell us, because I'm in awe, and Brandy, we are in awe. I think everyone is in awe of race callers in Australia. They're just so good. But how long did it take you, given that in between dog races, there might be 17, 18 minutes? How long did you take to just learn the names? Because I got a feeling I saw you in action once. Dead set, you learnt the names in a minute. Like 1 minute before the race, you switch on and you knew them.
No, that's correct. So you've got to realise that you don't learn the colours of the dogs or something or the horses the night before. There are certain race meetings where you've got to do that because you've got so much work on. But during the meeting, but the thing being that you don't do them that way. I'm going to say, for example, at the races, at the horses. You learn the colours when the jockeys get up in the mounting yard. That's when you learn the colours. And you do the same thing with the dogs. When they come onto the track, that's when you look at the dogs and study the colours and get the names to them. You've got to realise, too, there's a couple of things here. With the greyhounds always said they weren't the hardest, but they were the trickiest. Mm. Because there are eight runners in a race, and each runner has the same rug. One the red, two is the black and white, three is the white, four the blue, and so it goes down, right? So you've got those colours every race, but underneath those colours is a different name every race. So not only have you got to remember the names, you've got to forget the names also. And if you're having a bad night, where nothing's coming to you, you can get yourself a terrible pickle. You know, you just can't get the other runners out. I remember one night at Wentworth Park, I've never forgot it. I just couldn't get the first race out of my head. And it was just strange. You know, you can't believe it. Your mind can actually work that way. But, you know, with the horses, they come into the yard, and that's when you go through them. That's why I think Darren Flindell's a genius the way he does it. I'm going to say that they mount up in the theatre of the horse at the back, and your broadcasting box doesn't overlook that, only overlooks the front. They walk underneath the stand and come onto the track and then go straight to the barrier. So you've got to learn the colours from there to the barrier. That's difficult. But when you've got them walking around in front of you in the mounting yard for 5 minutes, well, that's good. That's where you find it. You know? That's how you've got to not only remember them, you've got to forget them. But yes, now you do it on the night when they get onto the track. That's something, you know, I suppose, you get accustomed to. You know, that's part of your job.
Yeah, the Rabbit of Paddington says, absolute gentleman, most exquisite voice. I grew up listening to him. Call my favourite dog, Miss High Low. Now, you've been done for 10 years, Paul. How was it when you first finished? Were you looking forward to retirement, or did you miss it because it was such a big part of your life?
Well, you're always going to miss it as part and parcel of your life. But it's not the racing that you miss. It's the people that you miss. I mean, that's the first thing you miss. You roll into a race meeting, you're saying hello to all the people you want to and everything else, and you're getting yourself set up for the night. There's a fair bit of regimentation on how you set yourself up for the night, and you've got to make yourself comfortable. You've got to You know, you don't want to arrive at work in a some sort of drama or something. You want to get there. You want to relax. You want to understand where you're at, and therefore study what you're going to do. So when you leave, you miss the racing, but you also miss the people. That's the main thing. You just miss the people. But I didn't expect to retire. I wasn't, I had never thought of it, really. The boss put it up to me because I asked a question about something. And he said, what do you think? And I had something on my mind. Long time ago, I was speaking to Barry Unsworth, our manager. And you all know Barry. He's a lovely gentleman. And I was speaking to Barry, and something came up about the number of races. I said, geez, we've got plenty of races on. He said, yeah, wait till you give them 24 hours a day. And I looked at him. I said, are you serious? He said, yes. Now, when I retired, one of the main reasons I retired was I had an absolute fear of racing inundating me. Now, in the night time, I knew very much so, more than anybody else, that the TAB was going to get, as soon as they realised the money they were going to turn over on greyhound racing, they were going to get as many greyhound races on at the prime time as they could. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, I'm going to, and I was just starting to get to the, situation where the racing was becoming very, very heavy in the night time. And anyways, I turned around and I thought, this just gets any heavier. I'm going to be never on air. I said, I'm going to be on air, do the race and disappear. Mm. So as a consequence, the persona that you have built over the years is going to disappear. Now, that's something that you've worked very hard to gain. That's very, very hard.
Robotic. It just, you go to the race, bang, the moment they hit the line, all right, they're off at the Meadows, and Meadows race finished, they're off at Bull Eye, and that's how it goes. Yeah, you're right, Paul. That's so true. We had a listener earlier ask about when you paraded a dog. We need to get to the bottom of this story. You were parading a dog that was the favourite, and you lost hold of it, and it bolted. Is this true?
Parading. Not to my knowledge, unless he's talking about Appen one day. Mm. At Appen one day, a black dog in at Appen one day. My wife abused me for all my life after it, and you went down a tarred strip onto the racetrack from the kennels, and I was walking the dog down. And I slipped and half-pipe fell on the dog. I can't ever remember letting the dog go, but it well may have happened, but he wouldn't have run anywhere. He wouldn't have run anywhere. That's the only time I can remember doing that. I can't remember ever losing a dog in my care, I must confess.
Okay.
He's pulled one out of the black hat there, that's for sure.
Phil says, I still have my school blazer made by Ambrosoli and Thompson at Surrey Hill, still in pristine condition. There you go. There's something different. There we go.
Well, Ambrosoli and Thompson was my father's cousin. All the Ambrosolis are related, obviously. But it was Ambrosoli and Thompson. We were Ambrosoli brothers. We're all basically at Broadway around that area. We were in Broadway and we're in Wembley House, then we're in the main drag at Railway Square.
Great. Carl from Cronulla says, green light on. Bunny on its way. Share a Debortley shortly. Paul is the Mickey. Debortley wines. Give us that. How about you have a Debortley's? Give us that, Paul. Come on.
No. Leave me alone. Don't nag. No input.
Good stuff. Paul, we can't thank you enough, mate, for giving us some time today. And it's our Throwback Thursday. You sound like we look at old footy players and say, geez, you look fit enough to play. You sound like you're bright enough. The voice is fantastic. You can call a race in a heartbeat. I bet you could. Thank you for coming on the program and sharing your life story.
Right or so, mate. Well, I don't know if it's a life story or not, but it's very nice to know that I've followed Darren Beedman into the slot, for goodness sake, you know. Mm. He was apparently on last week or something of that nature.
And, that's right.
So, you know, like a star like Darren, you're following him, that's pretty good, you know. That's excellent. No, it's been great to be on, mate. People talk about retiring. Mate, the one thing I inherited from my mother, for which I'm forever grateful, was she always said, I enjoy my own company. And in my job, I certainly had to do that. because if you didn't, then you're in plenty of strife. Because you know, I used to like to work on my own, and that was how it was, you know, along the way. But no, it was good. And of course, you've got the prime Penrith man on there. Do you realise the last time we spoke on air, Gregory Alexander?
I don't know
how many years ago. It was Peter Bosley was on.
Oh,
and
yes,
you're on with Peter Bosley on 2KY, and Peter said, "You know Paul Ambrosoli?" I always remember. Said Greg, "No, who's he?" That was a classic.
Oh, there's a giver.
I wasn't a dog watcher then, but since those days, Paul, when we listened to your last call, then I went, "Oh, that takes me back to the Pioneer Tavern." After a day of the races into the dogs.
Oh, how good, Paul! Great safe night. Travels, mate. Keep well. Thanks you again for coming on the program. It's been our honour.
And thank you very much for the invitation, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's been very kind.
Pleasure chatting, mate.
Paul Ambrosoli, best there ever was, has been, will be, potentially. Right here, Throwback Thursday and Breakfast with Vossie and Brandy. We're here for Brighton's Lawyers. Unable to work due to injury or illness, contact Brighton's Lawyers.